This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Welcome back. It's Kelly and Ramya. Thanks for sticking around. You can, of course, catch us Monday to Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, live on AMI TV. You can catch us at 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio, or you can catch us whenever you want by going to your favorite podcast platform, searching for Kelly and Ramya, and then consuming the content there in either full show format or as we provide you with segments every day as well. I'm Ramya Amadhin with Kelly McDonald. Thanks for being here.
So would you ever go see a show a second time?
Probably
like
not.
I was suggesting that people might do with the Rick Mercer, Jan Arden thing?
No, but that one's special because it's more improv slash, you know, spontaneity. I'm sure the show is looking different from
Each show is unique.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But no, not
would
like
you
a
do
concert
it?
Or anything.
No. No, but would you do it in this case?
In this case,
something like this, do you think?
Yeah. Something like that.
Bill Shackleton would say, no, Kelly's too cheap to do that.
You can watch the highlights on YouTube.
I was just going to say, you never know what people are filming with their phones.
You can watch entire things on YouTube now. Entire.
Yeah.
Do you know that people prepare for Beyonce concerts while watching entire Beyonce concerts from her tour at previous stops and just watch the entire thing so they know what they're signing up for when they go live?
And are those recorded by, like, Ramya with her cell phone
just
somebody watching it, right?
Exactly, yeah. And just putting it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then somebody saying, like, here's the actual full list in case you don't get, you know, all of it in one go.
Yeah, in case you have to go find pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not to mention the sound. Nowadays, it's a little better, so you don't have to put up with the sound being...
Yeah, you don't even...
This sort of distorted, like... Folks, it's that time. Let's get to our monthly woodworking chat with Jeff Thompson.
Hi, I'm Jeff Thompson. Let's talk wood. Practical woodworking from a blindness perspective. It's not, can I do it? It's, how can I do it? Now let's get started.
Mr. Thompson, would you go and see a concert or some kind of show twice? Have you had artists that you kind of would follow a little bit in your area?
I've actually tweeted with Jan Arden.
No. Yeah.
She called my state a flyover state. Coming out of Canada, I imagine, you know. So it was kind of neat, though.
I wonder if she's done many shows there. I wonder if that's why she called it, right? Maybe she gave it a pass.
Listening to you guys earlier, she's an entertainer, you know. She has songs and all of that, but Bublé, she does a lot with him, too, and all that. So that should be a good show.
Yeah, I think it will be. And she won't be singing, I don't think, unless it's, you never know, right? Like we talk about the name of it. My friend, we've got a cherry tea box. That's what we're working on today. So will you tell us a little bit about this project? And I mean, I think we both have ideas of what it might be. I'm a fan of anything cherry wood, if that is the crucial component.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was going to be. A friend of mine married a guy from the UK. And she said she wanted to get him a present, and she knew I did woodworking, and she wanted me to make a tea box. And I had no idea what it was going to be like. So I went and bought some tea, and I found the average size. And like we talked on our last show, how you develop a project, I measured the tea box. So I decided to make 6 compartments, a little oversized from the tea bag.
Right.
And then that's how it all started out. And, you know, it's one of those projects that with a click ruler and one tea bag, it made the whole project.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like you did the investigation into what it is without even really necessarily knowing what you were making, which is kind of a cool place to start. Now, are we talking about cherry tea or cherry wood?
Cherry wood. The project, the top, bottom, and sides are all cherry, but the inside I made out of what they use in like cigar boxes, humidors, and stuff. So I used a Spanish cedar, which is part of the mahogany family, and it really offset the color. So you have like a straw color and a cherry color. So it really looks neat when you open up the box.
Mm. So what was the reason you chose that particular wood for the inside? Not particularly that reason or what?
Well, I think she said, well, they're usually like a cigar box, you know, the lid opens up like that. And so I think cigar was planted in my head. And I thought, well, what do you put in? What kind of wood do you put inside a box? And I've made humidors with students before. And so I just thought, well, that's fine. I'll use that. And then it was the interlocking of the pieces. So you just take three pieces, two vertical or front to back and one by side. But I interlocked them like how you would put two peace signs together. And it just worked out really good. And I was kind of impressed at how it came about, not with just me, but how to develop it. Because, you know, I've taught a lot of students how to do stuff, and I had to do the same thing I was trying to tell them. Capture a cloud in your mind and then bring it down to reality.
When researching, knowing what you can, what you're comfortable with, did you start getting the idea of, I think I want mine to be like that? Or was it truly that, okay, I'll get my measurements and set the work? What really did you use the guide by, and describe how this thing is actually laid out in the sense of the way you put it together?
Well, I just figured six would form that cigar box rectangle, a box. Mm-hmm. What a great project for a beginner to make. It's all right to think that it's easy, but it's not when you really, because you got 360 degrees, every 90 degrees has to be perfect for it to come and not wibble wobble and all that stuff. And then I thought, let's make it look a little more decadent. Let's make the bottom bigger than the box, so it has a lip around the edges. And then let's match the top to do that. So it's like an Oreo cookie. You know, the box is in the middle, but the lid you can lift up from just by lifting the lip right there. And then I wanted this lay flat. So the hinges are actually cut in. So it lays perfectly flat, which, you know, all these little things of detail, like the corners weren't just going to be corners, they're going to be pillars. So when you come to the corner there, it's like a circle down. And I had to figure that out by getting different routers and trying it and then testing it six times. So I actually built three of these because I had enough wood to do it. And it was like one of those things, like they got the third one because that was the best one.
The best
and
one.
I have the second one. Yeah. So it was really interesting to have it evolve. And the last one I put together to myself was 2 years later. I got all the pieces out and I just sat down and started doing it again.
Yeah. I got a watch case, cherry wood. And I'm, of course, starting in my mind from there. And when you talk about overlap, when you talk about the pillars on the corners, and I have much more of a concept. Was there any... And I think mine has a glass, it has a glass window in the top of the lid, which I guess one could do. Anything in your research that said you can't do this because you're putting tea in it, you can do that. Was there any little do's or don'ts with the inside of it?
Well, I talked to her, the one who commissioned me to do it, and she said he just used tea bags, so it's not going to be live tea like someone would have
loose
cigar
leaf.
Tobacco.
Yeah, a lot loose leaf. Yeah, no. Yeah.
So, then it worked out pretty good. And, you know, mine today, even the inside, that I'm told it hasn't faded. So the inside still has that contrast to it. But I was wondering what they were expecting, you know. So I wanted everything hidden, like the screws on the bottom. I mitered the four sides and put them together. And then I did the pillars in the corners once it was together. Mm-hmm. And then I had to flip it upside down, work upside down and figure out where that oversized lid, because it's oversized, I had to balance that left and right, front and back, and then drill holes and then countersink the holes so the screws would disappear instead of just having them scratch the countertop that you put it on or whatever you put it on.
For sure.
And so there was a lot of
or having
detail.
To put something on the bottom like felt or something.
Yeah, I think for theirs I put Braille bump dots that we mark everything with. They worked so good
to lift it off.
Yeah,
like little feet.
And Well, what I did was I tried to get one to fit perfectly where they put the screws, but that's too picky. So I just put it next to that and it works really good. And those things I use on the gumball machines, on so many things. The back of pitchers on the bottom, put a dot there and it sits on the wall once it doesn't vibrate, you know, when someone shuts the door hard, you know.
Wow.
Multi-purpose Braille dots.
So let's go back. So once you did all that and you're inside and then obviously your overlap lid. So there wasn't anything because you were putting tea bags. And as soon as you mentioned tobacco, that's what I got thinking about. I mean, love that cherry wood smell. But I started thinking back in the days when my dad was a pipe smoker for a time of his life before he gave it up. And that's what I kind of got thinking of, the humidors, the where people would put that kind of thing in there. And that's where I got wondering, did you have to worry about something that wouldn't get stained or something that wouldn't dry your tea bag? I know you're putting six in there. So the idea is that someone who drinks tea, those won't be sitting into those individual ones sitting in there for like a month or something, unless somebody goes away or something.
Well, the thing is, when we're talking the humidor, that's humidity. The Spanish cedar will hold moisture so your tobacco doesn't dry out. And so that's part of the reason I did it with tea, because I don't know.
Yes.
To me, it comes in a tea bag. Other people I see steep it and they use raw stuff and they do all sorts of stuff. So that's why I went with that, because I figured it's closest thing I know to tobacco that would work.
Because it's leaves. You still have leaves you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And that's what I wondered. And that's why I thought if there was a do's or don'ts, that don't do this, don't use this kind of wood because you'll dry out your tea bags or anything like that. Huh?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Well, I was just going to say, when was the last time you were able to, aside from this one, pick up something like this, a project where you're not really sure exactly what you're getting into, and it was really like a trial and error situation, or just knowing that, you know, you got the skills to be able to try it out without necessarily knowing that you've done something like this before?
Oh, just up above me here, I picked up some cherry wood from a sawmill in Minnesota, and now on the other side I have some raw cedar wood, and it smells in here like a, I don't know, like a cedar closet. It's really neat. And I want to make a tabletop for the cabinets out here, just to make it a step it up a little bit and do that with it. And then I want to start some more other projects with the cedar for outdoor stuff. I did the butterfly houses, may make some more of those.
Right.
But when you challenge yourself a little bit, it's like, you know, you want to push the limits. So if you build more than one, you build a second, build a third, by about that fifth one, you pretty much got it honed down. So, you know, if for beginners, I would say build a box and then figure out what you would do next and grow from that. And that's exactly how I do it. It's no different than someone beginning than me with the set of skills that I have. I am always looking for that next one, that next thing. So you always push yourself a little bit.
It's all relative.
Further.
And it doesn't have to be a project getting bigger. It doesn't have to be necessarily more complicated. Just a different way of thinking of it.
And it's a practice for things like, because we often associate obviously a lot of what you're doing with tactile, right? Like being able to get to know your projects or understanding concepts tactilely. So sometimes if you don't really have that because you don't have something former, you know, or presented to you to go off of, then you're doing it just based on like written concepts, I guess, and understanding based on people's descriptions of something like this tea box.
Well, the reality is when you get smaller, people can put two hands on it. But if you build something like a shed, they just glance at it. But the small stuff, everyone's investigating it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really neat about tactile.
Yeah.
If you were going to, as you get to that fifth one and felt comfortable and you knew a few people were going to ask you for another, what kind of value would you put on it in the same way of if someone at least wanted to cover the cost of you making it and maybe some money for your time?
Well, the first one was commissioned. I just said $100 for it. However, if you wanted to do it as a business, I would put at least $175 on them. It was a good friend, but It's really hard to price the stuff. I don't think anyone gets real rich off doing hobby stuff. They have to have the passion to do it. And then it's kind of neat to give it away, silent auctions sometimes.
Yes.
A lot of,
yeah.
Like all my relatives have stuff of mine. One few of them even made it to Canada, the chains up there.
Well, we'll start looking around. Who's got it? Who's got this of his? Thanks, pal. Appreciate it.
Thanks, both of you. Have a good one.
Jeff Thompson, of course, joining us as he does once a month on the program. We do our woodworking talk and talking us through creating a cherry tea box.
After the break, we're learning about a cool initiative. It's called the Get Real Movement, and it aims to foster more inclusive community for 2SLGBTQ+ people. And we're going to talk to two of the organizers and people who are involved with the work. We'll be right back. It's Kelly and Rumia.
It's fun, insightful, and inclusive. Kelly and Rumia return in a minute.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.